The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with great value travel insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Suicide is a growing problem in Ireland, and anyone who has suffered this kind of loss will be all too familiar with the tragedy that strikes at the core of family and friends, and the heartbreaking consequences that it has for those left behind. I should warn you now that our next item relates to this difficult subject, and particularly if you've been affected by suicide, you might find it too upsetting to listen to. For one man in California, stopping people from leaping to their deaths from the Golden Gate Bridge has been his life's work. The iconic bridge in San Francisco attracts thousands of tourists every year, but sadly, it also attracts people for a much darker reason. Kevin Briggs has talked more than 200 people out of taking this desperate action, and he spoke to me from California about his work.
I introduced myself just as Kevin. To walk up to someone who's in the state of mind that they are in and go, "Hello, I'm Sergeant Kevin Briggs with the California Highway Patrol," that doesn't do it any good. I want them to see me just as Kevin, as another person. And I want to get their name if they'll give it to me, so I can personalize each and everything that we're talking about. And we call them hooks, something I can use with that person to communicate longer with. So if they do have kids, you know, ask them, "Well, how do you think your kids will feel without you?" And I'll go as deep as I can with them to see what is going on with them. I want to hear their story. If they're speaking, I will never interrupt. I want to hear what's going on with them. Not that I can solve their issues or their problems, but at least be a sounding board for them. It's really, really important.
And did you ever feel like talking graphically to people about how awful the impact of falling at 80 miles an hour could be?
You know, I will go into that, but that'll be in some time later on in the conversation if I need to bring that up, if it looks like it may be going that way, to tell them very, very, very few people survive a jump like this. And if you do, you know, look at the rest of your life after this. You could be crippled. It's, you know, you're falling at approximately 75 miles an hour, about 220 feet. So there's only about 1% or so of the folks that survive. But those that do, you know, they're crippled most of the time. They're back injuries and internal injuries. So, but I want to make it on the upswing. I want things to be a positive note if I can.
Well, Kevin, you were in an incredibly important situation, and as an expert in the field, I mean, did you find really that most people don't want to end their life? They just want to end the pain, I suppose.
Well, you're absolutely right with that. They don't want to hurt anyone, and people, I've heard it say, it's a selfish act that these folks do. It's not a selfish act. It's mental illness. This is a disease, like cancer or anything else like that. They are tired of the pain. They feel like they're a burden to society or to their families. They just want that pain to end. Most of these people, the very last thing they would want to do is hurt someone else. But they just feel they can't go on any longer. So that's why they wind up at the bridge.
I presume, fundamentally, I suppose, like, you know, everything is just about them. You know, you try to find out about them and their life. You don't talk about yourself. Although, actually, you could, of course, talk about yourself because you've had a tough enough time. Do you ever get into that at all?
I did have cancer. I had later on, and I had 3 heart surgeries, so I have some stents in my heart. I'm diagnosed with depression. My mother died when she was just 49, so all sorts of things. My grandfather on my father's side lost his life to suicide, so there's a whole gamut of things that I went through in my life. But you're right, I do not bring those up in conversations with folks who are over that rail because it's not about me. It's about them. And that's the really important part that I want to give to folks is it's not about us. It's about the folks that we're talking to, that we're listening to. Now, if they bring it up and say, "You've never had cancer, you don't know what it's like," or these different things. Now that's what another thing that we call a hook is, "Well, I did have cancer. Let me tell you my experiences with it, but it's going to be different than theirs." You know, sometimes given the number of wrong circumstances that we can, I believe each and every one of us could be over that rail. Maybe it's just one thing in their life that made them go up there. Maybe it's 30 things that went up there in their life to make them go up there. So, you know, it's really a part of the listening.
Well, you've been, Kevin, in this situation loads of times where you've literally had people's lives in your hands, I suppose. So how long might you be talking to an individual for?
Right. I've had it as little as 15, 20 minutes and gone up to over 7 hours. So, you know, it's like each and every person like a fingerprint. They're all different. And I don't try to rush it. I really don't. It's up to them. They hold the ball, so to speak. They hold the ball, and I want them to do that. It's very empowering. And it's like when I walk up to them, if they are below me, which generally they are because there's a little I-beam on the other side of that rail, which puts them lower than I am, I'm going to get down to their level, eye level, or below. I want to empower them as much as possible so they feel they're in control. And that really helps things also.
And how successful have you been? I mean, how many people have you persuaded not to go through with it?
The majority of folks that we do talk to, if we get a chance to talk to them, they do come back over the rail. Now, the folks that I have been the so-called lead negotiator on, I've lost two, and both very traumatic, both took a heavy toll on me, continue to do so, because I tried my very best to get these folks to come back over the rail. And these were folks not under the influence of any kind of drug or alcohol. They had years of depression in their lives, and you know, they just couldn't take it any longer. And I really, really tried. I tried with my heart. And I believe when they went and they died, a little piece of me died also.
And then, like, when you had to talk to somebody for 7 or 8 hours, presumably that went through the night and was probably freezing cold. What was the story there?
Right. This was a gentleman who was a construction worker. And we know that those folks have a high rate of suicide because it's seasonal. And this gentleman had lost his job. It went from the daytime into the evening. And with the bridge, it gets very, very foggy out there. And with that fog, it's almost like raining on you. So it's cold. It's miserable. The wind blows through there. It's a really tough time to begin with trying to talk with these folks. So we went on and on and on. Finally, this gentleman wouldn't talk to us hardly at all. He would just stand there. Finally, we found out that he did have a children. And that brought into play with him coming back over. But it took a long time.
Well, you spoke to somebody once who you said was terribly nice and well-mannered, and after about 40 minutes he said, "Kevin, I gotta go."
This was an African-American male, and you know, we had talked for about 40 minutes or so, and he shook my hand 3 times, but he never gave me his name. He wouldn't say why he was up there. He didn't talk a whole lot, but he was very friendly with us, decently dressed, and finally, he turned around and he shook my hand for the 3rd time and he said, "Kevin, I have to go. My grandmother's down there," meaning his grandmother had passed away. And he jumped. Just breaks your heart. Really does.
When he shakes your hand, is there never a question that you just grab his wrist and pull him up?
You know, I've thought about that. We've thought about that with the Marin Area California Highway Patrol. But I think it'd be a lot easier for them to pull us over if they really wanted to. I have not seen anyone try to do that yet. And in the negotiations world, you don't touch folks. It's just how it is. It could go bad in a hurry. But the bridge is very unique. And I think I developed rapport with these folks. And that's the only gentleman that I've actually shook hands with before, you know, this happened and he jumped. So I felt comfortable with it, however comfortable you can get in that circumstance. He offered his hand. I shook it. And, you know, I don't regret it at all. I think, what else could I have done? And it beats me up. But I know deep down that I tried as hard as I could and did whatever I could to get that gentleman to come back over. It just didn't go as planned.
It's hardly surprising, I suppose. Like, these experiences, obviously, they stay with you and all that. But I've only got to mention a name to you, and I presume you remember the full detail. Jason's story, what was that?
Right. And Jason, age 32, young man, flew out to the bridge 3 times from New Jersey. You know, it's on the East Coast. Flew out all the way from the East Coast to the bridge. And this was on July 22nd of 2013. I spoke with him for about an hour. And this man, to me, he was a genius. He was so eloquent in his speech. He was just amazing to be around. But he had that mental illness, and he just couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, he had stopped his medication, and that's a big thing with folks. 99% of the folks that we see up there who were prescribed medication are off it when they come up to the bridge. I always ask them, and that's the answer. Nope, I stopped taking it for whatever reason. But we spoke for about an hour, and then Jason asked me if I knew about Pandora's Box. And I said yes. You know, recalling our Greek mythology, Zeus created Pandora and sent her down with a box and said, never open that box. Well, of course she does, and out flies all sorts of plagues and evils and sorrows against man. And the only good thing in that box was hope. Well, Jason says, when I open the box, hope is the greatest evil. Mm-hmm. That's how profound he was. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting on what we call the cord, which is kind of the I-beam over the rail. And after he said that, just a little bit later, he just leaned over to his right, and he was gone. He all the way down to the water. He hit. I watched him go down. And then we had the Coast Guard right there who picked him up. But right as that went on, and this was the dead center, like we talked about, of the bridge, right in the middle, another gentleman who was up at the North Tower jumped. So we had two bodies in the water at the same time. And when I talk about we lost 46 folks to suicide from that bridge, that's confirmed. We did get Jason's body. The other body, when we went up there, that was run over by a big container ship. So that person, through the Marin County coroner, that body isn't even counted. But we know what happened. I saw the body in the water. So that's when I said we'd lose about 60 that year. That's what I mean by that. And an hour and a half prior to all of this, we had another one. What's unusual, we had three that day. And I've spoken with Jason's parents. I actually flew out to New Jersey to meet them. And his father is doing horribly. It's such a tragedy. And you know what? One suicide can lead to another. Mm. So, you know, I watched him go down. This, it haunts me. What could I have done better? It really does.
What kind of training did you actually get for a job like this? I mean, are we just talking about a highway patrolman who happened to be assigned to the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge? Or were you spotted as being possibly somebody who'd be good at talking and listening to distressed people?
Actually, my training when I first started this was zero. I had no training. Yeah. I don't remember any kind of training like this when I went through the academy in 1990. And it was tough. It was really tough. So I just kind of had to go back and think, all right, what if I was in this situation? What would I want someone to say? How would I like them to be? And that really helped me. But as the years progressed, I did get some training. And I was one of the very few and very fortunate and lucky members of the California Highway Patrol to go through the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, their crisis negotiation school. And that helped me tremendously.
Well, let's talk about your successes then and take a look at the people that you've persuaded to come back over the rail to the safe side. What happens after that?
What happens is when they decide on their own to come back over that rail, which takes, I'll add, a great amount of courage, because it's easy to let go and all your troubles are gone, whatever brought you there. But it's so hard to come back over that rail. It takes a lot of courage. But when they do, we take them to one of the local hospitals to be evaluated by a mental health professional each and every time. So we can't just get them over and let them go. It wouldn't be right. When they come back over, I never say if, because I want this to be positive. I say when they come back over, I have to place them in handcuffs, but they're not under arrest. They didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. Technically, it's trespassing where they're at, but this is mental illness. So no, they're not under arrest. I place you in handcuffs only because that's our policy. Now I'm going to take you down to maybe San Francisco General Hospital or a hospital on the Marin side for treatment, for help. Hopefully they can get some help there. And that's it. And, you know, I've never had an issue with someone that I've had to place handcuffs on.
But, like, do you make promises to them? And if you do you make sure that you deliver on those promises? Like, you know, I'll get you a cup of coffee. Do you make sure that you get them that cup of coffee? Is it important that you know, kind of dot every I, cross every T in terms of the promises that you've made?
It really is. If I find out that person's a smoker and I say, you know what, I will give you a cigarette when you come back over. I will get you that cup of coffee when you come back over. It's so important that I do that I honor that, because one, it builds that rapport better. It shows that, yes, the police are okay. He promised me this. He did get this. So what happens if I take that gentleman or that woman to a local hospital? They get out, and sometime later, they come back onto another bridge, that same bridge or a building or something. They're not going to trust the police at all if I hadn't done this to them before, you know. So if I promise them something, if I promise them a hamburger, boy, I got to get them a hamburger.
There has been talk, of course, Kevin, of, you know, huge investment money, you know, money-wise, of steel nets, and I know there are some kind of barriers that make it difficult, but they're talking about proper suicide barriers. Would steel nets, for instance, be a solution, do you think?
You know, I think it will. Right now, all that's there is about a 4-foot metal rail, a pedestrian rail, and that's, you know, that's pretty easy to get over. It's only 4 feet. So within the next 5 years, there's supposed to be a net, and I'm thinking it's a steel net because of the marine environment, that they're going to place on the sides of the bridge. And as far as I know, it's supposed to be about 20 feet down and stick out maybe 20 feet or so. So when someone, if they decide to jump, they get in this net, and I believe it kind of encapsulates them. It closes up on them. And then we're going to have some members of the fire department come and get them out of that. But I think this will dramatically reduce the number of suicides from that bridge.
All right, well, look, I'll tell you, if there was ever a man to ask this question, you're definitely that man. If I've got a friend who I think is feeling suicidal, do you think I should approach them about it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Or I would say if you didn't feel as if you couldn't develop the rapport or have the rapport, and you knew somebody else that did, have them do it. And I would say, have a plan on how you're going to talk to this. And that's another big portion of my book, is it's not just people in crisis. They're stressed. There's stress in the workplace. You know, the military, a lot of stress. Ooh, all sorts of stuff. So how do we talk to folks who may be in crisis? Maybe they're not suicidal. Maybe they're just having a bad time in their life. But let's find out. Think of the regret that you would have if you saw all these signs and you didn't do something. Just think, oh, it'll pass. They're okay. They're just having a bad time right now in their life.
Well, a couple of years ago, you retired and you've got the book out now, as well as setting up this company called Pivotal Points. What does Pivotal Points aim to do?
To get folks, encourage them to get help if they have a mental illness, to break this stigma. And I've developed some guides, really, to intervene with someone in a crisis. How do we approach them? One of those is my release model, and it's an acronym. It stands for Recognize, Engage, Listen, Empathy, Accept, Support, and Encourage. And it provides folks with tools to communicate with someone, you know, in distress or crisis, so they're better prepared and the person that you're speaking with does not feel judged or humiliated.
Okay, well, Kevin, if people want to get in touch, they can get your book on Amazon, and also you can go to pivotal-points.com as well. And that's really where it's all at, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And if you have a Barnes & Noble over there, I don't know if you do, but there's barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. It is available online.
Kevin, thank you so much. Indeed, a very difficult subject, but you've given us a great insight into a very, very harrowing problem indeed. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us. That's Kevin Briggs.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.